Imagine a night during World War II. Two men stand on the roof of King's College Chapel watching for German bombers. One is John Maynard Keynes, advisor to the British Treasury. The other is Friedrich Hayek, an Austrian economist. These intellectual titans, fierce opponents who nonetheless shared common concerns, would define the most consequential economic debate of the 20th century. Their clash wasn't merely academic. It determined how nations responded to the Great Depression, influenced post-war prosperity, and continues to frame our political divisions today. When the 2008 financial crisis hit, their competing theories suddenly became urgent again. The battle between government intervention and free markets remains as relevant now as when these brilliant men first crossed swords nearly a century ago. Keynes and Hayek emerged from vastly different worlds. Keynes, born to academic parents, attended Eton and Cambridge, where the Bohemian Bloomsbury Group's rejection of Victorian values shaped his thinking. Despite pacifist tendencies, his brilliant mind became essential to wartime economic policy. Hayek returned to a devastated post-W1 Vienna, where the Austro-Hungarian Empire had collapsed and hyperinflation ravaged the economy. Shoes costing 12 marks in 1913 cost 32 trillion a decade later. His monthly salary jumped from 5,000 kronen to 1 million in less than a year, requiring 200 pay raises in 8 months. This hyperinflation experience permanently shaped Hayek's economic thinking, instilling a deep aversion to inflationary policies and government currency manipulation. Their contrasting backgrounds created fundamentally different approaches. Keynes developed practical economic solutions from within the British establishment, while Hayek, having witnessed imperial collapse and his family savings evaporate, formulated theories emphasizing stability and warning against government intervention. By 1924, Keynes had begun dismantling free market orthodoxy, advocating for public works spending to cure unemployment. We need an impulse, a jolt, an acceleration. His casual attitude toward taxpayer money shocked many, but he insisted even imperfect government investment trumped inaction. Meanwhile, in Vienna, Hayek developed theories concluding that attempts to eliminate business cycles were futile. The fundamental divide emerged. Keynes believed government should actively improve economic conditions, while Hayek saw economic forces as immutable natural laws. Their intellectual battle ignited when Lionel Robbins of the London School of Economics invited Hayek to lecture in 1931, explicitly to fight Keynes. Hayek's sensational lectures introduced the Austrian school to British economists. He argued that increasing money supply merely redistributes wealth. The increase of the amount of money only means that somebody has to give up part of his additional product to the producers of the new money. While Hayek advocated caution, Keynes urged British consumers to spend rather than save. Whenever you save 5 shillings, you put a man out of work for a day. The intellectual confrontation escalated when Hayek published a scathing critique of Keynes's treatise in Economica. With thinly veiled condescension, Hayek portrayed Keynes as an ignorant provincial trapped in Anglo-Saxon thinking, making inadequate attempts to grasp continental economic theories. He dismissed Keynes's work as extremely difficult, unsystematic, and entirely unintelligible. Keynes confronted the relatively unknown Austrian economist directly. His response in Economica was fierce, describing Hayek's prices and production as one of the most frightful muddles I have ever read, while grudgingly acknowledging it contained germs of an idea. The exchange quickly descended into bitter personal attacks. Cambridge professor Arthur Pigou compared their debate to fighting Kilkenny cats, lamenting the decline in civility. Rather than continue personally, Keynes deployed Piero Straffa, a brilliant Italian economist he had rescued from Mussolini's regime, to review Hayek's work. Straffa's review was brutally dismissive, describing Hayek's lectures as a feat of endurance on behalf of the audience as much as of the lecturer. The debate grew so technical that economist Frank Knight confessed he couldn't tell what Straffa and Hayek were arguing about. After his frustrating exchanges with Hayek, Keynes strategically shifted focus toward fellow economists who could champion his ideas. This resulted in The General Theory, a comprehensive presentation of his economic vision that took 5 years to complete. While developing his theories, Keynes published The Means to Prosperity, clearly articulating what would become Keynesianism. He challenged orthodox economists who believed recovery required only hard work, endurance, frugality, and countered Hayekian claims that government spending would merely cause inflation. Keynes incorporated the multiplier concept, showing how newly employed workers would increase spending, creating additional employment. He highlighted broader benefits. Half of what the chancellor remits will return to him from the saving on the dole and the higher yield of taxation. Published in February 1936, The General Theory was eagerly consumed despite its difficult prose. Paul Samuelson later described it as badly written and poorly organized, yet a work of genius. While Keynes's work revolutionized economic thought, Hayek remained conspicuously silent despite receiving advance copies, later admitting this silence was a dereliction of duty. Following Keynes' death in 1946, he received hero's memorial services at Westminster Abbey and the National Cathedral. His ideas peaked with Johnson's Great Society programs addressing civil rights, poverty, Medicare, and Medicaid. Even Nixon declared, "Now I am a Keynesian in economics." Meanwhile, Hayek faced professional isolation despite the Road to Serfdom's popular success. By the late 1960s, he believed his career was finished. Hayek's fortunes reversed when the 1973 OPEC oil crisis created stagflation, the previously impossible combination of high inflation and low growth. This phenomenon discredited Keynesianism and created an opening for Hayek's ideas through Reagan and Thatcher. Reagan's economic policies, inspired by Hayek and Friedman, included monetary tightening and substantial tax cuts. Inflation fell from 11.8% to 3.7%, though critics noted Reagan's success relied heavily on government spending, particularly defense. Public debt grew from one-third of GDP to more than half, expanding from $900 billion to $2.8 trillion. The 2008 financial crisis reignited the Keynes-Hayek debate. Greenspan admitted to Congress that the whole intellectual edifice collapsed. Bush responded with Keynesian measures, a $168 billion stimulus package and $700 billion in bank bailouts. Obama followed with a $787 billion stimulus bill, declaring, "It is largely thanks to the Recovery Act that a second depression is no longer a possibility." 80 years after their famous duel, who won? While Hayek gained political influence, his vision remained too radical even for champions like Reagan and Thatcher, who couldn't fully embrace his anti-democratic ideas without electoral consequences. Few conservatives acknowledge their debt to Keynes for twice saving capitalism. Hayek himself had no such reservations, calling Keynes one of the most influential and colorful minds of his generation. As Galbraith noted, Keynes was ultimately a conservative trying to save capitalism, but such conservatism does not appeal to the truly committed conservative, who would rather accept depression than compromise principles. In today's polarized debates, we should remember both men sought the same goal, a prosperous, free society. Their disagreement was about means, not ends. Perhaps the wisest approach incorporates elements from both visions, adapting to circumstances rather than dogmatically adhering to either pure intervention or pure market solutions.